From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Glad to be back with you. We got a great show for you today. We're very excited about our guest this week. Two original members of the Village People will be with us. That's Felipe Rose and David Hodo. And before you ask, that's the Indian and the construction worker. They're going to be here. They're still playing. But the band has been updated for the new millennium, so those two are now joined by the IT guy, the life coach, and the octomom. So give us a call, the number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Gretchen from Bend, Oregon.
Hey, Gretchen, how are things in Bend?
Wonderful.
I've heard it's a beautiful place out there.
It is gorgeous, but don't tell anybody.
Believe me, you're mentioning it on our show. No one will ever know. Gretchen, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Gretchen.
Next, deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hello, Kiri.
Hello, Gretchen.
And lastly, let me introduce you to the man behind the Too Beautiful to Live podcast, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Luke.
Hi, Gretchen.
Gretchen, welcome to the show. Now, we're going to start you off with a new game this week. It's inspired by singer Ricky Martin's admission last week that he is, in fact, gay. So we are calling this game...
Duh.
You see, it occurred to us how refreshing it would be if other people in the news finally admitted what is completely obvious to the rest of us. So we decided to do it for them. Carl is going to give you three obvious confessions, which we made up, and you tell us what newsmaker is finally coming clean. Ready to play?
Sure.
All right, here is your first fake admission.
A fundraiser at a high-priced lesbian bondage nightclub? Honestly, I'm as shocked as you are that I haven't been fired. What do I have to do?
Who was that?
Michael Steele?
Yes, Michael Steele. Very good. The Republican Party chairman is under siege a week after it was learned that the GOP paid $2,000 to entertain donors at a high-priced, topless, bondage, lesbian nightclub. Trying to defend it, they said, yes, they were there, but they weren't enjoying it. It was actually family values resistance training. Toughening them up for the amorally harsh world out there. Says one young donor, I feel stronger now. I was able to withstand 7 lap dances. Another said, I wanted to see what America would be like if we allowed gay marriage. I didn't realize it would be so intriguing.
That place is right near where I live.
Really?
I didn't know it was there. I never thought to follow the Republicans.
No. This train of chubby, wealthy white people walking down the street. Where are they going?
They're probably going to Arby's or something. I had no idea that they were going to this club that I didn't know existed.
Wow. It is in an Arby's, though.
Oh, it is.
It's very secret. You go. You ask for the bacon cheddar Montana,
right. And you go
and
behind
a wall
the curtain,
spins
yeah.
around.
That's exciting. Lap dance with horseradish sauce.
Now, he is trying to clean up his act, Michael Steele is. He has canceled some future scheduled fundraisers, including the one at Michael Vick's dogfighting ring, Tattoo Night with Jesse James. And this is sad because a lot of people had signed up the hike in the Appalachian Trail with Governor Mark Sanford. We're not going to do that. All right, here is your next fake confession.
I'll let you in on a little secret. It is just a big iPhone without the phone.
That, we imagine, was Steve Jobs, who was once again proved right when people lined up to buy what?
I have one in my hand, an iPad.
You do?
You know, Gretchen, I know you want to brag, but... So that means you're looking at the internet as we're asking you these questions.
Look, if you send it to me, I'll get you Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine.
Yeah, it's amazing. Immediately we go from, like, you know, posture of mockery to, ooh, you have one?
Yeah.
Fans of the new device say it's just a little bit more expensive than other computers that do a lot more things. But it has the advantage of being slightly more difficult to use. See, in a regular laptop, sending an email is no big deal, but on the iPad, it's a personal triumph over adversity.
But it's like the cute guy in class, you know? It doesn't have to do anything. It just has to be cute.
Yeah. And everybody wants it.
Everybody wants it. Yeah.
The other thing with these iPads is they're like an iPhone in that they don't have a tactile keyboard.
Right.
So you're just pushing on this thing, and you're often not hitting the letter you intended. So then you get into this weird battle with Steve Jobs over if that's the word you wanted to use or not. So you might be saying, hey, let's go get a beer, but it's like rutabaga. And there's a point where you're in such a hurry that you just end up having a rutabaga because you don't want to go back and fix every single word.
You're meeting with your friends at a farm stand, and
exactly.
You're not having a good time anymore.
Not at all. Thanks, Steve Jobs.
Well, that's how smart Steve Jobs is, because he invested heavily in rutabagas before he even launched this thing.
That's right.
Here's something we were wondering about. Every new technology, it takes a while to figure out how you can annoy people with it. So you had the automobile, and a few years later, we had car horns and traffic. We have cell phones, but pretty soon people learn that they can, like, talk on it in public and drive people crazy. So how are we going to annoy people with our iPads?
I think just showing up with one pretty much annoys everybody in the room.
Really?
Wearing a pair of jeans with, like, the largest back pocket of all time.
How about you can't like go to the movies and answer a phone with it because it has no phone, but you can go to the movies and watch another movie.
A better movie.
Yeah.
You could choose in a dark restaurant to look at the restaurant's menu on your iPad rather than looking at the actual physical menu.
That would be
tremendously annoying and probably very convenient.
That's great. Yeah.
Gretchen, how do you like yours?
I love it very much.
What do you use it for that you couldn't do before?
Nothing.
All right, here is your next completely fabricated, obvious admission.
You want to know the real reason I did that press conference to apologize to everyone right before the Masters? Somebody told me chicks dig regret.
Who was that?
That would have to be Tiger Woods.
Yes, Tiger Woods. Very good. Woods made his return to golf this week at the Masters. He started this week with his first press conference since his accident, where he apologized many times for his many undescribed transgressions. He talked about it. He's trying to be a better person now, trying to present a friendlier image. It's true. He was seen for the first time this week smiling at other people who were not, at that moment, naked.
You know, I think I speak for all of chickdom, when I say that...
Which is usually my job, but you can take it tonight, Kiri.
Thank you, Luke. When I say that, you know, chicks don't really dig cheating on your wife, that's not the kind of regret they dig.
Really?
You're not speaking for all of chickdom. You're speaking for the 50% of chickdom that didn't sleep with Tiger Woods.
Exactly.
I think it's more like 48%, but yes.
Yeah.
The sad thing is he got off to a great start of the tournament, shot an amazing first round, but then things went to heck because he had a breakdown and a relapse in the 14th tee and started chatting up the ball washer. He was like, so what do you do? Oh, really? Carl, how did Gretchen do in our quiz?
Gretchen, you were perfect. You had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Hey,
well done,
you.
Gretchen. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, according to an article in the New York Times this week, there's a new trend in movie making. These days, you pretty much start writing a script with a primary character, the outlines of a plot, and what?
A flatulence joke.
No, we do that, but so far that hasn't...
I'll
give you a hint.
Please.
Like the can of Coke now gets its own trailer.
Oh, product placement.
Right, product placement. There has always been product placement in movies. This is, of course, when the character uses a particular product or service or goes to a store. But what's changing is that now
the product placements are becoming an integral part of script development right at the beginning. Agents are making pitches like, who's attached to the script? Well, we've got George Clooney and Bed Bath & Beyond. Hollywood is even remaking some classics to better integrate products. For example, the new version of Apocalypse Now will be really different because they've changed the line to, I love the smell of Glade plug-ins in the morning.
Plug it in, plug it in.
They're going to do Goldfinger, and 007 will now say, Bond, Gold Bond, medicated powder. And this is great. This made some product placement agent millions. They're remaking Cool Hand Luke. You know that famous line, what we've got here is a failure to communicate? Well, they've made it, can you hear me now?
I was pretty impressed at how seamlessly they integrated Harry Potter in the Chamber of Secret.
That was pretty good.
They just replotted it. That he finds himself in a completely odorless environment.
Well, it's strong enough for a Weasley, but it's pH balanced for Hermione.
Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Will Kennemer from Gunnersville, Alabama.
Hey, Will, how are you?
Oh, hanging in there.
Now, where's Gunnersville? I haven't heard of that.
We're in northeast Alabama, close to Huntsville.
Close to Huntsville. Okay, so what do you do there?
Husband to my beautiful wife and father to two teenage boys.
That's great. All of a sudden, I feel like Dr. Laura. I don't know. All right, I'll shake that off. Welcome to the show. Well, great to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Will's topic?
Bigger is not always better.
Americans like big things. And like 50-inch plasma? Ha, make mine 150-inch. But sometimes it can be too big. This week we learned that supersizing sometimes comes with an unexpected cost. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about going big backfiring. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Or iPad. First up, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
Move over, Reuben. Stand down, BLT. Take a seat, moons over my hammy. There's a new awesomely named sandwich sweeping the nation, the Chad Etmuller. The aha moment came when Mr. Etmuller, a father of three, went into a Georgia sandwich shop to order up his favorite delicacy, a concoction called the Wicked, which features five different meats and three different cheeses. However, on this particular day, five meats and three cheeses were just not going to be enough to quell Chad Etmuller's hunger, for he was apparently feeling a mite peckish. So he did the only logical thing. He ordered a double wicked. That's right, 10 meat portions and six cheese sections. Everything was going swimmingly until Etmuller tried to eat this sin against nature, at which point he suffered what doctors called a rare double dislocation of the mandible. His jaw locked up in the open sandwich hole position. For 14 hours, it took emergency surgery to get things back to normal. Etmuller seems to be taking things in stride, though, foregoing a lawsuit against the shop, asking instead for a replacement sandwich and to be allowed to pick the official name of his creation. So far, the lockjaw and the double dislocator are leading the voting. No word, though, on how the much more accurate "this is why they hate our freedom" is faring.
A sandwich so big it dislocates a man's jaw. Your next story of something too big not to fail comes from Kiri O'Connor.
The world of paleontology was rocked last week when scientists in Beijing unveiled the partial skeleton of what they said was the largest dinosaur ever found. The reptile, known as Yao Mingasaur, was said to be, nose to tail, the size of 3 747 jetliners plus two Hummers. Only one hitch. Scientists at the Peabody Museum in Boston smell a rotten dinosaur egg. Such a beast, they say, would have collapsed its own legs and, most tellingly, would not have been able to eat enough to stay alive. You can't fight nature and you can't fight gravity, said the Peabody's professor, Robert Wiltenberg. With dinosaurs, you actually can't be too big to fail.
Okay, a dinosaur too big to have really lived. And your last story about the peril of embiggening comes from Adam Felber.
Canada's West Edmonton Mall has an ice palace, a water park, and 800 stores. But it turns out that it also has weather, indigenous plant life, and at least two unique species of poison-resistant, highly aggressive rats. In an article published in New Scientist magazine this week, Drs. Ella and Michael Sperling reveal that the world's oldest mega mall has developed its own thriving ecosystem over the past three decades. Or, to paraphrase scientist Jeff Goldblum, life has found a way. And that life is starting to threaten the species known as the common shopper. Quote, it's become sort of a retail Galapagos, says Ella. The climate is so different from the world outside that living things have had to adapt. In addition to the aforementioned rats, there is also a venomous spider generally not found north of Mexico and a new toxic variety of mold that appears to thrive on discarded fried foods. The Sperlings say they now want to study other large-scale enclosed environments. Quote, all we need are sufficiently large systems that are completely self-contained and become detached from their outside environments. So up next, they'll study the Republican Party.
All right, here then are your choices. From Luke Burbank, the story of a supersized sandwich so supersized that a man dislocated his jaw trying to eat it. From Kerry O'Connor, a supposed dinosaur fossil that other scientists say was so big it could never have actually gotten up from the ground. Or from Adam Felber, a mall so big it started to have its own ecosystem, including newly discovered toxic animals. Which of these is a story of something just too big for its own good?
I'm going to take a sheer guess here.
Sheer guess.
Let's go with the sandwich.
You're going to go with a sandwich, Luke's story. That's a guess. All right, we'll see if you're correct. Well, we spoke to somebody who was directly affected by this story.
The sandwich is called the Wicked. It's their signature sandwich at Woodbridge. It's five meat. But because I hadn't eaten all day long, I was absolutely famished, so I ordered it with double the meat. And that was my downfall, ultimately.
It was. That was Chad Etmuller of Georgia, as you can hear. He can now move his jaw. You were correct. Luke had the real story. You've earned a point for Luke. But more importantly, you have won our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine, voicemail, cell phone, whatever you like. You've got it. You've won. Congratulations.
All right. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And now the game where we invite on people we know and ask them about things they don't know. It's called Not My Job. Felipe Rose and David Hodo are two of the founding members, the original members, of the Village People. Namely, they're the Indian and the construction worker in the famous band. Even if you don't dance, you have danced to YMCA and maybe even Macho Man or in the Navy when no one was looking. It is now the 30th anniversary of their classic pseudo-biographical film, Can't Stop the Music, and the Village People are heading out on their next tour. Next week, Felipe Rose and David Hodo, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
Now, let's go back to the beginning, 30 years ago in the 70s. Tell us about how you guys... Well, I'm assuming, Felipe, are you an Indian?
My dad is American Indian, Lakota.
Okay, so you are, and you can make that claim. And David, are you an actual construction worker?
No, I'm just kind of an American mutt.
All right. My question is, how did you and the other guys in the band, because as everybody knows, you appeared as Indian construction worker, cop, soldier. How did you guys pick your jobs? Were they assigned to you? How did you work that out?
No, I was dancing in clubs in New York City in my native gear, and then a French producer was like looking for the next big thing, and he approached me in the club and said, you know, I want to do something with you. And I said, get lost, buddy. And then, you know, he kept popping up, and then finally he said, no, seriously, you know, I want to put a group together. And everyone that auditioned is pretty much by the stereotype.
Right. And how did you know that your band was taking off? Was there a moment where you looked at each other and said, oh, my God, this is going to be huge?
From the very first performance we had at a club in Brooklyn called 2001 Disco Odyssey, where they filmed Saturday Night Fever, it was all Italian, and they all had the Farrah Fawcett hair and the John Travolta pompadour, and they'd heard our music, but they'd never seen us. The lights came up, and it was like the parting of the Red Sea.
Hey, what is going on here?
We ended up having an outstanding reception from them, and the next time we came to Brooklyn, they had to turn away hundreds of people. They couldn't even get in the club.
So it started right away.
And yes, absolutely, yes. Right away.
Tell me about your biggest hit. You remember, but clearly the biggest one is YMCA. And did you guys come up with the iconic, you know, Make the Letters Dance? Was that you guys?
No, that was the dancers on American Bandstand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really? You're doing it on American Bandstand? And they started doing the letters with their arms?
Yeah, Dick Clark stopped. We had just sung the song, and Dick Clark said, the dancers have something they want to show you. And so the dancers showed us these steps, and we thought, well, that's pretty stupid.
Let's do it.
We've made a 30-year career out of it.
Yeah. All right. Now, you do the dance now. Now, whenever you perform it, you do it the rest of us.
Oh,
do.
Yeah, they'd kill us.
Who does the C? Because I have a question. Do you ever worry about, like, you're doing the dance or singing? You're afraid of doing the C facing the wrong way?
Well, David spells it out to the audience.
Yeah, we have a lesson where we teach the audience.
You teach the audience.
Do it correctly. And they do it the same direction we do it. Okay. So we have to turn around.
Oh, it's like a mirror image.
Yeah. The other way.
This is why we didn't record the Hokey Pokey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they're doing YMDA. What's that? I don't know what that is. I have to. One of the great things about disco in general, and you guys, is you had this stuff coming out of the gay culture in New York City, and it was being embraced by all these people, all Kansas City housewives. Everybody were doing these songs and doing these dances. And did that give you guys any sort of sly satisfaction that they were singing this happy song about going down to the YMCA and
well, you know,
the
Studio 54, I mean, when it became so huge and disco went mainstream, that's pretty much when the crossover happened. So now they're grandmothers and they're bringing their grandchildren.
I know. It's just, it's fabulous, if I could coin it.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's really good. And, oh, he got fabulous on us.
Yeah, I did. Let me ask you what you've been doing since then. It's been 30 years. You guys are still performing, still touring.
33 years.
So you're
still where have you been performing? You're still playing clubs? Where were you playing?
Well, we play all over the world.
We do like festivals in Europe, the big festivals in Italy, and we're heading back to Australia in October for a month, and that's going to be, I think, our 34th trip.
I heard, tell me if it's true, I hope it's true, that you've played bar mitzvahs.
Oh, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, you name them.
Man, they pay good,
bar
let me tell you.
I feel so bad about mine because you weren't there. But do you customize your act for your bar mitzvah?
You know,
do you do like
funny
Hebrew letters when you're spelling? do you do the four letters of the Shema? What do you do?
We rupture something.
With bar mitzvahs, it's the parents that are hiring us for themselves, because the little kids sit and look at us like, what?
We did a bar mitzvah where the dad rented out the Intrepid.
You're kidding me.
City.
Somebody had a bar mitzvah for their kid on an aircraft carrier with the Village People.
And they had West Point cadets. They had West Point cadets. I mean, this guy went all out.
Yeah.
That kid is definitely going to be gay.
But we've had...
And I'm assuming you did in the Navy, right?
On the ship,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
It'd be great.
Well,
if you
know, we've done bar mitzvahs like with Barry White and Jessica Simpson at the PR.
No, yeah. Some kid got you and Jessica Simpson at his bar
and
mitzvah.
Barry White, yeah,
and Barry White.
Tell me about it.
Barry White's like, today you are. A
I
man.
Was jealous.
I am
I was jealous.
That is, I have to call my parents now.
Tell them that you want the Village People to do your bar mitzvah all over.
I'll mention you right after Jessica Simpson, if you don't mind. But I'll bring you up. One last question. I do not begrudge you an instant of your success and happiness, but doing the same act in those costumes for 33 years, do you ever think to yourself, man, I'd like to do something else. Yeah, I'd like to play ballads. Yeah, I'd like to do something.
No.
Just for variety.
We change the act a bit. We change it around.
Oh, I'd like to play golf.
Funny, not a single one of them was the golfer.
Felipe and David, we are delighted to have you with us, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
Really, Really Not Your Job.
So, you two were the construction worker in the Indian, right? So we're going to ask you about the ones that weren't your jobs, the other three guys, or three of the other guys in the Village People. Answer two out of three questions about the other fake jobs in the band, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine or voicemail. Carl, who are Felipe and David from the Village People playing for?
Deborah Heiligman of New York, New York.
All right. First up. Ready to play, guys?
Yep.
You are allowed to consult. You are allowed to answer in unison. You are allowed to act out the letters as you answer, whatever you like. First up, of course, cowboy. Cowboy. Real cowboys back in the olden days in the open range still needed some entertainment out there. Which of these was a real cowboy pastime in the Old West? A, having weeks-long flea-catching contests, keeping their prey in special jars. B, holding elaborate, quote, stag dances, at which the cowboy and or his friends dressed up as dancing girls. Or C, cow pat bingo.
I guess cow pat bingo.
You're going to go for cow pat bingo?
I grew up on a farm, and we used to throw cow patties at each other like frisbees.
Sure, so why not?
I can see making a game out of it.
Well, there is a game called cow pat bingo, but it's a recent invention. The cowboys used to have stag parties because cowboys were seen as so disreputable and filthy that no real woman would associate with them. So some of them would dress up as women and dance for the
So that's
amusement.
Cow drag.
Cow drag. Cow drag. They did cow drag. All right, next question. Next job in the band, other than yours, the biker. Turns out they have biker gangs in Australia as well, but there's an important difference down under. What is it? A, Australian outlaw bikers prefer to ride those big motorized tricycles so they don't tip. B, in Australia, they're called bikey gangs. Bikey gangs. Or C, they're all animal activists, part of their culture, so they never wear leather or eat meat.
They're B.
You're going with bikey gangs? You know that? You've been there? Well, you're right. It is, in fact, yeah. Bikey gang.
Yeah, we were actually with a bike gang in Melbourne.
In Melbourne. It's like, oh, no, our Australian town's being terrorized by the bikey gang. All right, this is great. You've got one right with one to go. Get this one right, you win. Lastly, of course, the cop. The first official city police force was, of course, the London Police, known as the Bobbies, formed in 1829. But things did not go well at the start. What happened to the very first Bobby hired? It was badge number one. What happened to the guy who had badge number one? A, he came across a robbery in progress and immediately offered to help steal the loot. B, he gave up a foot chase because he said he had only agreed to work until dinner and he was hungry. Or C, he was fired for drunkenness 4 hours after being hired.
I would say he was fired for drunkenness.
That's your choice? Do you agree?
Yeah.
You guys are right. That's exactly what happened. The first Bobby hired was the first Bobby fired. The first police force did not attract the most upstanding people back then, and the first hire turned out to be a poor choice.
How can you take someone called a Bobby serious?
Exactly right. Carl, how did our guest do?
They had two correct answers, so they win for Deborah Heiligman of New York.
Well done. Congratulations.
And Peter,
yes, sir.
Just so that my people don't come after you, it's Native Americans.
Oh, we wanted to know about that. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Because you were, I mean, when we talked about the village people growing up, there was like, oh, there's the construction workers
right,
up in the Indian.
Right, back then, but not
but
anymore.
I'm sorry, I should have asked.
No, don't be.
You've changed that. So now it's the Native American and the construction worker.
And we call each other, when we see each other face to face, we go, yo, skin.
Oh, really? All right. Well, anyway, whatever they're playing, Felipe Rose and David Hodo are two of the founding members of the immortal disco group, The Village People. Thank you so much for being with us today. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl co-hosts American Idol with Ryman Seacrest. In our listener limerick challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, last week, a Navy admiral came before the House Armed Services Committee to discuss a plan to station 8,000 more U.S. troops on the island of Guam. Well, they got grilled by Democratic Congressman Hank Johnson of Georgia, who said he was worried that what might happen when all those people land on Guam.
It would tip over.
That's what he said.
What?
Yes. He said he was afraid Guam might tip over.
Wow.
On an instantly viral video on YouTube, an actual U.S. congressman said to a real U.S. admiral, he said, quote, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize. And the admiral, looking rather stunned, but Keeping a straight face responds, quote, "We don't anticipate that." Now, you may laugh, and you do, at Congressman Johnson, but we all remember the doomed U.S. naval base at Atlantis. Look what happened to them. Yeah. By the way, after the widespread uproar after this video went around, the congressman said he was speaking in a metaphor. He says he meant, quote, "tipping over" to stand for sinking straight down and crushing all the nice mermaids.
Well, I mean, the solution is obvious. Just keep half of the people on one side and half of the people on the other.
Yeah, and if anybody ever wants to go over to the other side, you have to switch with somebody. Yeah. You have to make sure.
Or just in case it tips over, everything you build on the island, you also build a replica of it on the underside.
Yep, obviously.
Oh, that's great.
As soon as it flips over, everybody just goes to the...
Jeez, I was just going to...
And it's cleaner.
And it's like a half day of school.
Yeah
absolutely. Happens. Absolutely. Kiri, as you know, John McCain is in a tough primary campaign back in Arizona, and this week he made a surprising confession. He said that he has never been a what?
A maverick.
That's what he said. He said that he's never been a maverick. McCain told Newsweek, quote, "I never considered myself a maverick," unquote. This from the guy whose campaign slogan was, "The Original Maverick," who wrote an autobiography on which he called himself a maverick on the cover. McCain, of course, is trying to reinvent himself as a far-right winger in the face of a primary challenge, and we surmise that all that lying has kind of created a centripetal force which carried him too far. McCain went on to say that he never was a Vietnam veteran, he doesn't have a temper, and he is not, and has never been, really old. This is an incredible reversal. It's like so insane that John McCain was, "I'm not a maverick." It's like FDR saying, "You know what? There are a lot of things to fear." Spiders. Bats. The nighttime. I'm scared of the nighttime. It's like Barack Obama saying, "I never said we could. What are you talking about?"
"I said we might."
Richard Nixon said, "I actually am a crook."
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
I did it.
Oh, am I a crook? Yes. Yes.
Luke, listen to Carl read a Twitter message from this past Sunday.
"Was meditating on Shiva mantra and earth began to shake. Sorry about that."
That was famed alternative medicine man Deepak Chopra. He used Twitter to apologize to everyone for causing what?
An earthquake.
Yes. The big one. Northern Mexico was shaken by an earthquake measured 7.2 in the Richter scale, and it was felt as far north as L.A. The guru tweeted two mea culpas for the tremor, and he didn't stop there. He then tweeted, "Broke into a sweat during yoga practice. Sorry for causing the floods in Rhode Island." Then he tweeted, "Had a burrito for lunch. Sorry for the tornado in Kansas."
Ooh. You know, just because you go on Oprah a lot doesn't mean you can actually cause the earth to move.
No, she can't.
Oprah can do that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
It doesn't Oprah rub off. Can, Chopra can't. That's just...
What an incredibly narcissistic tweet. And think about the people who tweet normally. And when you have the most narcissistic tweet of a given day, you're beating out Kardashians, Lil Wayne, various Tiger Mr. I.
Yeah, it's true. Mr. I? Is that
I don't know. How do you...
I like what that. Mr. I.
What is the collective noun for tiger mistresses? A skank.
A skank.
Of tiger mistresses.
A skank.
Kiri, Regina Dugan is the head of DARPA, that's the Pentagon's research arm, and she testified last week before the House Armed Services Committee about a troubling shortage being faced by the United States military. A shortage of what?
A shortage of... It's got to be something fancy.
No, nothing fancy. It's like so many pocket protectors, but so few pockets.
Geeks.
They need geeks.
Technically,
you're exactly right.
Technically nerds.
Nerds,
but
nerds, geeks. Well, here's the thing. The decline in science education in this country means fewer nerds are being produced, a fact which has serious national security implications. Nerds.
Not to mention what it's done to the wedgie industry.
Exactly. Nerds molt into tech geeks. Tech geeks grow into scientists, and scientists maintain the United States' technical superiority. The DARPA chief suggests correcting the problem by trying to bribe would-be scientists with scholarships and iPods, but no, she doesn't have to worry. The current nerd shortage is self-correcting. High school is just like any other complex ecosystem. It balances out. Without nerds to stuff into lockers, jocks will have to feed on the burnouts, allowing the marijuana crops to flourish and multiply, which in turn leads to stoned cheerleaders. Then the jocks, with no one to cheer for them, begin to die out, freeing nerds to rise again. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Colorado Springs on May 6th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Elizabeth Rhine in San Jose, California.
I'm sorry.
Elizabeth Rhine.
Rhyme? Like, this rhymes with that?
Not quite.
Not quite. Because I was hoping that would have been a beautiful coincidence.
Rhine, like the river in German.
Oh, Rhine.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
It's all right. How long?
Call back when you're ready to play our German river game.
Yeah.
Okay, will do.
Because no, that would be ironic.
I got so excited. How long would it take you to have it legally changed? Because we can hold.
I'll get right on it.
All right. Elizabeth, welcome to our show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
Here's your first limerick.
So what if my horse appears lame? His title puts others to shame. He's Nellie Bly Francis. That betters my chances. I'll go with the silliest.
Name?
Right, name. Horse racing enthusiasts have long to look down their noses at people who pick a racehorse just because they think a name like Panty Raid, a real horse, is funny. But a British horse racing organization surveyed 2,000 women and found picking the horse with a funny name is more likely to win the bet than spending hours poring over racing stats. The news was immediately embraced by thoroughbred owners who simultaneously all changed their horses' names to Senior Snarfle Bunny Happy Pants.
I was so bad on that horse.
How could you resist, actually? And the three legs, you'd still go, it'll make it.
It's got moxie.
All right, very good. Here is your next limerick.
Junk food gives my brain cells no strain. Its dopamine makes things so plain. Then longings will tug just like a strong drug. Powdered donuts act just like...
cocaine.
Yes, cocaine.
Oh, my.
Seems like you're speaking from experience.
Not quite.
If you have ever laid awake at night obsessing about that cheesecake in the fridge, we now know the reason you are an addict. A new study from the Scripps Research Institute has found that rich fatty foods like junk food are just as addictive as cocaine or heroin. The first ding-dong, of course, is free. But it triggers a chemical in your brain that makes you want more and more. In response to the study, many communities are now offering no questions asked free Twinkie exchange programs. You go down to the van, they set it up in the rougher neighborhoods, you hand in your Twinkie, they give you something less bad for you. Crack. Here is your last limerick.
It's the kind of wine everyone mocks. A bouquet of wood pulp and old socks. Yet it's easier to stack, so you won't need a rack for wine that is sold in a...
box.
Yes, box. Subpar party hosts and desperate housewives alike mourned this week after the death of winemaker and inventor Thomas Angove. Angove loved wine, but hated the fact that bottles are a pain to open and only contain one bottleful of wine. So he invented wine in a box. People said he was crazy, but now wine in a box has become a standard at lousy cocktail parties worldwide. He died this week at the age of 92, and in his honor, an attempt was made to christen a ship in his name. But sadly, the box of wine just kept bouncing off the hull. Carl, how did Elizabeth do in our quiz?
Oh, Elizabeth had a good round, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Elizabeth, I'll be doing the voice on your home answering machine.
Well done, Elizabeth. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for playing our game.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points, of course. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Luke Burbank each has 3 points. Kiri O'Connor has 2.
Okay, Kiri. She doesn't want your pity. That's right, Kiri, isn't it? You don't want their pity.
No, I want their pity.
Oh, come on. All right, Kiri, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill in the blank. On Thursday, the U.S. and Russia signed a treaty designed to shrink stockpiles of blanks.
Nuclear arms.
Right. The recent sex abuse scandal caused the Vatican to announce it will have stricter background checks when electing the next blank.
Cardinals and Pope.
Yeah. A ruling by a federal court this week called into question the FCC's authority to regulate the blank.
It's the net neutrality thing.
The internet.
Yeah.
Give me the answer to you. This week, United Airlines announced it was negotiating a possible merger with blank.
U.S. Air.
Right. Nice. A new road sign in the northern Italian city of Treviso warns drivers of roving blanks.
Roving wild boars.
No, prostitutes. J.K. Rowling, Justin Bieber, and cast members from Sesame Street were among those who attended the blank at the White House.
Easter egg roll.
Right. Scottie Pippen and Karl Malone were among this year's inductees into the blank.
Basketball Hall of Fame.
Right. A suspect fleeing Cleveland police last week hopped a barbed wire fence to escape without realizing that his new hiding place was a blank.
A jail. A prison.
Yes, but not just a prison, a woman's prison. The state women's prison in Cleveland was not a particularly good hiding place for the male motorist who was easily identified by authorities. The shaken, bruised fugitive told police, "Man, that's not at all what it's like on Cinemax." Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 16 points and the lead.
Well done. We flipped a coin. Adam has elected to go next. Fill in the blank. Dangerous levels of methane gas hindered rescue efforts after a mine blast in blank.
West Virginia.
Right. In a press event on Thursday, Steve Jobs revealed that a new operating system that will allow blanks to multitask.
iPhones.
Right. Spirit Airlines announced this week that it would become the first airline to begin charging passengers for blank.
Carry-on luggage.
Right. Virginia Governor Robert McDonnell was hit with a barrage of criticism from people nationwide when he declared April to be blank in Virginia.
Confederate Remembering Awareness Month.
Exactly right. Snack lovers celebrated the 80th anniversary of the invention of the blank this week.
Twinkie?
Right. Daytime talk show Maven Blank announced that her new cable show would air in primetime.
Oprah.
Right.
Winfrey.
A woman who accidentally crashed her car through the front window of a Michigan hair salon decided afterward to blank.
Get her hair done.
Exactly right. Marion Zock is her name. Her foot slipped when she was parking her Ford Fusion outside Classic Hair Design. She shot through the wall and into the salon. Zock says she, quote, sat there with my face in my hands because I was so embarrassed. But when she looked up, she realized that the crash had already really done a number on her hair. And since she was inside already... Carl, how did Adam do on our quiz?
Adam had a great round. 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Adam has taken the lead.
Well done, Adam. How many, then, does Luke need?
Luke needs 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Luke, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. Internal memos released this week show executives at blank debated coming clean about accelerator problems back in January.
Toyota.
Right. On Monday, underdog Butler University lost to blank for the men's NCAA championship title.
Duke.
Right. A diplomat from Qatar smoking in an airplane bathroom caused a terror scare when he said he was just trying to blank.
Blow up the plane?
More or less. He said he was setting his shoes on fire. Saying that they're on track to make a profit in the future, on Wednesday, automaker blank announced fourth quarter losses of $3.4 billion.
GM.
Right. Throwing out the first pitch for the Nationals on opening day, blank tossed it high and outside.
President Obama.
Right. Ousted from office last year, on Sunday, blank was fired from the Celebrity Apprentice as well.
Blagojevich.
Right. Police in Pennsylvania charged a man. They were so proud. Police in Pennsylvania charged a man with public drunkenness after witnesses found him blanking.
The witnesses found him watching The Apprentice with Rod Blagojevich.
No, they found him giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to a dead possum.
I heard about this. I can't believe that I forgot that.
It's true. You have to give Donald Wolf credit. He was trying to help, and possums do have a reputation for faking their own death.
Was he like really doing the whole thing? He was like, come on, breathe, damn you, breathe, and pressing on the possum's. Oh my God.
He was giving it mouth to mouth when they rolled up. Seriously.
That's nuts.
I mean, possums have extraordinarily long snouts, don't they? Just, you know.
Well, they can't go to snout to snout.
Well, it's just, I'm just thinking of the logistics of trying to create a seal with somebody's, with a possum's mouth. It's just. Or a seal's mouth, for that matter. Don't know why you would.
Anyway, Carl, did Luke do well enough to win?
Well, Luke needed at least 7 correct answers to tie. Luke had just 6. So with 17 points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Woohoo!
You're the man.
Well done, Adam. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that President Obama has signed the big nuclear treaty with Russia, what his next big treaty will be. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And the National Association of Realtors, providing information about the home buyer tax credit at houselogic.com/homebuyertaxcredit. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Acton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will President Obama's next big treaty be? Kiri O'Connor.
Oh, the cats are going to make peace with the dogs, and they're all going to gang up on the ferrets.
Adam Felber.
After 4 decades, Obama will finally bring warring Americans together to agree that light beer is both filling and not particularly tasty.
And Luke Burbank.
He'll reunite John and Kate Gosselin, who will turn their kids over to someone more responsible, like, say, R. Kelly, and reunite their heartlights.
And if Mr. Obama signs any of those treaties, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Adam Felber, and Kiri O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. We love that you do. I am Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. This is NPR.